Well, let me welcome back Kevin Lucco here to Systematically Wild. And Kevin, we're going to begin with a big club this week, I think is where we're going to start out, is had a very tough schedule ahead as they were taking on New Jersey in New Jersey, had to travel on to Philadelphia, then came home to face Chicago, came away 2-0-1 this week. As you and I are talking, leading Seattle right now. Let me make sure that's updated. I have to check to make sure.
Yeah, 4-0.
To make sure I'm still talking about it. Oh, yeah, they're blowing them out right now. So these Wild are really rolling, and the loss of Kaprizov, they're just not letting them hurt them right now.
No, they're not. It was a very interesting week. I did expect them to come out of New Jersey with 2 points, but they did exactly that. We'll recap that as we go through the individual games. But frankly, and I think the team will say it itself, they did not play very well on Thursday in Philadelphia, nor on Saturday and back home against Chicago. But and even today, you know, as I'm watching here, they're getting outshot 27-13. But Matt Boldy has once again put the team on his shoulders with a hat trick. So they're it seems to keep finding a way to rattle off wins, and you just hope that that can keep going as the team waits for the return of Kirill Kaprizov, which at this point doesn't sound like it's going to be very soon.
What I like about their performance this week, Kevin, is that it was, no matter how the style of game developed, they came away with points out of it. You have a tough 2-1 gritty performance against New Jersey. You go to a more wide-open contest against Philadelphia on Thursday, come back to home to take on Chicago, pull out a gritty victory in that game. I thought, you know, if this team needs to score goals, they can score goals. But if they need to get great goaltending, they can get that too. And I thought, you know, that says a lot about the potential success for this team come playoff time.
I was pretty interested this afternoon watching NHL Network, and Kevin Weeks and former Wild goalie Devin Dubnyk were on there, and they were talking about goaltending in the West Conference, and they had put the combo of Marc-Andre Fleury and Philip Gustafson right at the top when it comes to West Conference goaltending. And, you know, they're right. That definitely bodes well for the playoffs if you got a combo such as those two still on the top of their games.
Well, it was a nice week for former Iowa Wild players, starting on Tuesday night there with the victory against New Jersey, 2-1 shootout victory, overtime victory. I'm sorry, I said 2-1 shootout. 2-1 overtime victory on Tuesday week over New Jersey. Mason Shaw scores first for the team in the third period. Great goaltending battle through the first two periods. Mason Shaw gives them a 1-0 lead at 6:41 of the third period. New Jersey able to battle back to tie the score, but Matt Boldy comes up with a game winner in overtime as overtime's about to collapse there, or come to an end, excuse me. And Minnesota with a big win there, Kevin.
You know, Mason Shaw was just getting what we're seeing to be a Mason Shaw kind of goal. You know, the puck bounced off the end boards, was laying in the crease, and Shaw was able to fight off two defenders to pop the puck in to give the Wild a 1-0 lead. It was kind of interesting in the end of overtime. It looked like New Jersey was coming down for a potential game-winning goal. I think it was Timo Meier had the shot off the goalpost, and the rebound came out to Matt Boldy in the neutral zone. And we, you know, watching, you're thinking, well, he's got to do something quick here because they're running out of time. Well, it ends up they talked to Boldy after the game. He had no idea how much time was left. All he knew is that he was dog tired from his shift. But he puts a move on and puts the puck in the net right as time was expiring and gives the Wild a big 2-1 victory.
Gustafson with 47 saves in that contest. I mean, that the NHL level, that is a ridiculous number of saves to come up with. And as you were talking about how good this goaltending has been, you know, as you look at his performance, New Jersey is a very good team, and they've done some nice moves to improve that club at the trade deadline, Kevin. Could you see that Gustafson is the guy they turn to come playoff time?
It was weird because you talked to Gustafson after the game, and you can kind of see it in the first period. His rebound control wasn't very good, and it seemed like he was fighting the puck, and you just thought, if the Devils got any offense going, it was going to be a long night, but it just seemed like the light switch flipped with Gustafson, and in the third period especially, he held the Wild in the game, and you hope it's going to be a tough call for Dean Evason come playoff time as to which goalie he's going to go with. Because if they're both going good, it's going to be hard to tell the other one he's not playing.
On Thursday, a 5-4 loss to Philadelphia. Still come away with a point out of it as they lose in a shootout. Matt Boldy, another big night for the club. And, you know, a couple weeks ago, Kevin, you were talking to me about he was a guy that really needed to start stepping up. It seemed like he'd, you know, gotten into a rut. And, boy, all of a sudden, this guy has just caught fire.
No doubt about it. And the general consensus is that Marcus Johansson joining the club has just sped the line up with Eriksson Ek and Boldy, and it's just been magic for the Wild, because with Kaprizov out of the lineup, Hartman and Zuccarello's offenses dried up quite a bit, where now you're counting on Johansson, Eriksson Ek, and Boldy for a good share of your offense now.
You know, Marc-Andre Fleury has nothing to go out and prove, Kevin. The guy's Stanley Cup champion, you know, multiple times, has been a great goaltender in this league, probably a Hall of Famer one day we're looking at here. I wonder, though, does he have to feel like he's, you know, I've got to believe he's looking at every one of these games and thinking, man, Gustafson had a great game and I did not have a particularly good one. They could very seriously turn to him, although I was a guy who was brought in to help lead this club to a Stanley Cup. He's looking a lot better than I am right now.
Well, I wouldn't say a lot better. I saw the statistics for both guys, and yeah, I mean, Gustafson's kind of otherworldly right now, but Fleury, I believe the goals against were 2.5. His save percentage was over 92, and he has not lost a game in regulation in his last 9, so it's not like Fleury's been sloughing off at all either. So, like I said, it's going to be hopefully a very difficult decision, because hopefully both goalies are still going good by playoff time.
On Saturday, the team jumps out to a 1-0 lead on Ryan Reeves' 5th goal of the season in the second period. Chicago able to tie the game up on a Lucas Reichel goal, but Ryan Hartman scores at just a little over a minute left in that contest, and Frederick Boudreau closes it out with his 14th goal of the season. Nice, gritty performance by the team out there. Great goaltending again, Kevin. A team you got to beat, and they came out with a victory out of it.
Honestly, though, one of the more boring games I have seen in this season. It was a 90s night at Xcel Energy Center, and it was definitely a 90s kind of game, because first period, shots on goal were 5 apiece, and it didn't even feel like that many. It was like the old days of the neutral zone trap, and, you know, neither team was playing very good at all. But Ryan Reeves gets the fortuitous bounce as he centers a puck towards the net and pops in on former Wild goalie Al Stalock. Minnesota made one of their very few defensive mistakes, as I believe it was Jake Middleton that kind of went after his own rebound, and it got away from him and started 2-on-1 going the other way, where Lucas Reichel deposited in the net to tie the game. But late in the third, it was kind of interesting. Matt Zuccarello lofted a puck towards the neutral zone, and Connor Murphy of the Hawks thought he had the play on it. Didn't realize that Hartman's right behind him, collides with Hartman. Hartman ends with the puck on a breakaway, scores, and that was ball game.
Wow, that sounds like quite a finish there to that contest for sure. As Kevin and I are speaking, Minnesota still holding a 4-0 lead over the Seattle Kraken. Matt Boldy with the natural hat trick, even scoring one of the power play and adding 2 more goals, up to 28 right now. Man, he's having a phenomenal year, no doubt about that whatsoever. Minnesota, though, Kevin, as we are talking about it here tonight, going to be about to be 43-22-9. That will give them a three-point edge over the Colorado Avalanche, who are hard charging there again, 8-2-0 in their last 10. You talked about the Colorado looked like they were going to be the team that could come back, as they will have 2 games in hand after tonight, but they would be 3 points behind. Can Minnesota stave them off, Kevin?
Boy, it's going to be tough. The Wild definitely have a tougher schedule right now than Dallas or Colorado. When you look at Minnesota's got to go to Colorado on Wednesday night, and then I believe they're in Las Vegas on Saturday night. And I believe then right back to Minnesota next Monday. So last three games in a row with two of the best teams in the Western Conference. So, you know, nothing else. I guess we'll know a lot more about this Wild team by the time we take to the air next Tuesday, because I will be at the game. So we'll have to record the show after the Vegas game at XL Energy Center. Or do we do it on my way home from the game?
We might try that out, because I'll be on California time at that time, so that'll be early to me still. So we could do that.
Yeah, it'll only be like 7:30, 7:45 to you. So
exactly. So we might do that. Let me ask you, Kevin. This is a team I know you've talked about has had disappointing playoff performances. You have Colorado at Colorado this week. As you mentioned, you go to Vegas. They're going to probably win the Pacific Division. Then you have Vegas at home. Do you feel like in any way that the team looks at those and goes, man, these are kind of critical games for us in the sense that we want to prove that we can beat these teams because we're going to have to beat them in the playoffs?
I think a little bit of that seeps into their mind. And frankly, you know, Dean Evason will probably try to tell you just the opposite, that, you know, every game against any opponent, you know, they're all worth 2 points each. So I think he just wants his team playing the right way, playing in your own end like he should be, and limiting the opponent's opportunities, because right now you're not going to get 5-6 goals a night. But if you play the game right in your own end, more times than not, you're going to come out with a win. So I think right now with Evason, he just wants his team playing the right way.
Well, let's drop down to the AHL team. They got a 2-1 week for this club. It started out, Kevin, looked like this was going to be a miserable week for this team as they fall behind 3-0 to San Diego on Tuesday night and then battle back with 3 second period goals of their own, 2 on the power play, before winning in a shootout, 4-3 victory over San Diego. Talk about a gutsy performance to come back in that contest.
And I think that was huge for the team, too, that instead of coming home with a 1-3 record on a road trip, they came home 2-2, and I think that was definitely did a lot for the confidence of the club going into the weekend games with Grand Rapids.
You know, he scores a goal here, and later on in the week we're going to talk about it in a minute, but you and I talked a lot about the surprise season of Sammy Walker and how he really put things together. Stephen Fogarty has come out of nowhere and been just a great guy that they look to count on for, you know, one in a three-game week. This is a guy you could count on for 2 to 4 points every week.
And, you know, as we were going into the season, too, it was guys like Fogarty, it was a guy like Nick Batan that they were relying on to get the points that guys in the past, like Jerry Mayhew and Cal O'Reilly, were responsible for getting. So we talked about where's the veteran presence going to be, who's going to be the guys to step up, and it looks like Fogarty and Nick Batan have filled that role nicely.
Absolutely. Fogarty with a goal and assist in that game. Batan with an assist that he has onto himself there is Zane McIntyre stops 21 of 24 shots during the victory. The team then comes home, and it's just kind of an enigma for this club. They just, you know, have a huge victory. They battle back and sweep San Diego over the weekend, and then come back and lose on Friday night 4-3. They do take a 3-1 lead in this contest, but the Grand Rapids Griffins able to battle back and tie the score. A terrible goal at the end. I'm not saying terrible in the sense of a bad play on their part. Just you never want to give up a goal 5 seconds left in the game that ties the contest. And Grand Rapids then comes and pulls out the victory, Kevin. That could have been a serious heartbreaker for this club.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you of last season when Iowa had so many of these last-second heartbreaks. So That was a tough one to take, especially with the Grand Rapids team that's playing pretty shorthanded right now with a lot of their guys called up to Detroit and playing with some guys that they had called up from Toledo, including the goaltender John Letteman, who got the win.
As Kevin is fond of saying, is that sometimes you want to shake off a game like that as quickly as possible and get back on the ice. A 12 o'clock game on Saturday allows them to do just that. They come away with a 3-0 victory as Zane McIntyre, absolutely spectacular in this game, stops all 27 shots he faced. They have three different scores in that. Nick Patan scores his 20th of the year, Fogarty with an assist in that. Turner Ottenbright gets a goal. He also would add an assist later, and Patan adds his second goal of the game, an empty netter with a minute and 6 seconds left in the contest to give the team the victory. Man, Kevin, you had a very disappointing loss on Friday night, came back with a huge victory on Saturday. I mean, talk about a change in momentum and emotion for this club.
I'm sorry, you may have got one of the names wrong. I think that was Turner Orr with goals in two consecutive games now.
Yes, it is. He is then out of nowhere, too. He was kind of a guy just dangling on a small number of points.
No, he had, like, I think he had two goals going into the weekend and scored in consecutive games. So that was a nice surprise. To one of the guys that's kind of the heart and soul of the team, usually playing the role of the tough defenseman. So it was nice for him to get, as we say, a couple of tickles.
Well, this week they welcome back San Diego here again to town, and the Iowa Wild entered the week at 31-24-10. They are hanging on to fourth place in this division, currently three games ahead of Rockford, who has two games in hand on them. They welcome San Diego, still dead last in the Pacific Division there at 19-43-2. The two games you clearly say, you went to San Diego, you swept them, you got to come back here and get two out of this. But I think right at this point, Kevin, it's realistic to say Iowa's battling for fourth spot against Rockford. 5 points, still reasonably, nine games away to get 5 points up on Manitoba. But they have two games in hand. I think we're looking for fourth and fifth place right now.
I think so, and like I think we may have touched on last week, a lot of guys that have been the soul of Rockford have been finding themselves up with the big club playing for Chicago. I know they just sent down Buddy Robinson, who's one of their core players, so that'll be a help to Rockford. But that's definitely what you're battling right now is trying to be that home team for that play-in series. I think that's just huge, especially when you're playing all three at home, I believe. So that's the race within the race, I think. I don't think they're going to catch one, two, or three, but I think they can definitely hold on to the number four spot. And the way you do that is try to take two wins from a hapless San Diego team this weekend.
Then this will be next week. They have a home-and-home series against Chicago, a team that they should be beating, but they're just not. For some reason, they had a very difficult time with these Wolves. Then Milwaukee comes to town, and then they face Texas two games to close out the season. The Texas is always very difficult against the Iowa Wild, and realistically, both Milwaukee and Texas could still be battling for the top spot in this division on those final 8 days of the season here. So you're going to probably get the very best performance out of them. So I think what you're really looking at right now is I almost feel like these two contests against San Diego are must win just because you want to ensure, I mean, you've got to feel like you have to have these victories because you don't know what you're going to get out of Chicago, and you could be battling very hard against Milwaukee and Texas.
The key will be just bank as many points as you can before you find yourself in a bit of a meat grinder to end the regular season.
Well, let's jump down to the Iowa Heartlanders, a team I got to watch up close and personal this last week as they took on the Wichita Thunder, where I was broadcasting for this past week. And first of all, let me say, those were three of the most entertaining games I have seen in quite a while. Hard-fought battles from start to finish. What I did not realize, so Kevin, I like kind of your insight about this. These teams have just faced each other twice in the history of the clubs. Once last year, Wichita came up Early around the season, the Heartlanders went down to Wichita to take on the Thunder. But, man, animosity grew quickly between those three clubs. I just was surprised by that.
Well, I don't think you can be really surprised, especially by Saturday night after you've played them for games on Wednesday and Friday, and you had Thursday just to stew around. So I can see where the blood pressure might have been up a little bit come Saturday.
On Wednesday night, it was a battle of power play goals that really helped both teams to get this contest into overtime. Brett Bowen scored 2:43 into the first to give Wichita the lead. Jesse Jock scored just as the power play ended for the Heartlanders to tie the game. Wichita retook the lead on a Quinn Preston power play goal on a one-timer at 16:27. But Zach White, who was fantastic all week long, I'm going to talk about him in a little bit, had a power play goal to tie the score with about 15 minutes left in the game. Mikel Sunil with a great move across the slot to win the game in overtime. Mitch Benson in his first performance for the team. Coming out of college, Kevin, he looked pretty solid for the club.
Yeah, well, little I saw, it seemed like he acclimated himself pretty good to the pro game.
On Friday, Wichita jumped out to a 2-0 lead in this contest. The first time in the history between these clubs that one team had led by two goals in short history. But Iowa battled hard in this contest, came back to tie the game. Kevin McKernan scores with about a little over 6 minutes left in the contest. Then with the Hunter Jones on the bench, Tommy Paratino comes up with a goal with a minute 15 left. Then a no-man's land situation in overtime as Gavin Gould tried to dive to knock the puck away. That created a 2-on-0 with Tyler Bush making a nice move to tuck the puck between the legs of Roman Basran for the winner. Tyler Bush had been up with the Iowa Wild, Kevin, came back down just at the right time to come up with a game winner.
No doubt about that. I mean, the timing was right there. I believe he did get into a game or two with Iowa, so it was nice to see that he did get a little bit of AHL experience. But, boy, he was the right guy at the right time for the Heartlanders on Friday night.
It looked like on Saturday that Iowa was going to come away with the second game of this series. They jump out to a 2-0 lead in the first and were just absolutely dominating this contest. But a very interesting situation arose at the end of the first period where Austin Crossley and Zach White had gotten into, again, this series got very heated from the very start of it, but Saturday night was kind of boiling over. Both of them wound up getting 10-game misconduct penalties, and Wichita got two power plays early in that period. With White on the penalty box on the bench, they scored two power play goals to tie the game. Braden Watts adds a goal at 11:23. Wichita does add one more goal and an empty netter late in that contest. But I learned so much about how valuable Zach White is to this club, Kevin. I got to tell you, I was hearing they were looking to deal him early in the season because he was not producing offensively. But I was incredibly impressed at his performance. I feel like this is a guy that they could really build their club around if they're able to keep him around.
And that's the thing, if they can keep him around. But and especially at this point of the year, too, where, and I've seen a lot of signings in the last week of guys wrapping up their college careers, going right to the pro level. Right now, you've got a lot of these teams got a lot of young guys playing in them. So if you can keep a guy around that's got experience, that's just going to be huge.
Iowa enters the week, Kevin, at 17-33-14. They did come away with 3 points out of that week, which I think was very solid and looking to hurt Wichita's chances of making a playoff appearance. This week they have one of those horrific three-game sets in three different cities where they will travel to Toledo on Friday, then come to Kalamazoo on Saturday before taking on Fort Wayne in Fort Wayne on Sunday. I never understand these road trips this way, but okay. And then we'll go on for two more games in Wheeling and Indy following week. At least they don't get, I mean, have Toledo to open the week, but don't have a bunch of games against Cincinnati. These three games, Kevin, three different cities, what do you look for out of the club out of this week?
I think you're going to see a pretty good effort because right now I think I was just in that devil-may-care, just happy to play right now kind of mode. And I don't think there's any pressure on them to win. So I think you'll see a good effort out of the Heartlanders.
Indy is locked into a playoff spot right now, grabbing that third spot. They're clearly not going to catch either Toledo or Cincinnati. Toledo finally lost, by the way, after 20 straight games with either a win or an overtime loss. They're not going to catch Cincinnati. So they're probably feeling pretty good about where their playoff spot. You might get a little bit of a break, I would think, Kevin, with they might be looking to rest some guys and just try to stay as healthy as possible for the playoffs. Fort Wayne has a 14-point edge over Wheeling. They're pretty much locked in at this point in that fourth spot, just not mathematically yet. And then Kalamazoo is a team that they still have a legitimate shot of catching. 6 points behind right now. They have one. Kalamazoo has one game in hand, but you know it'd be quite a feather in the organization's cap if they were to get themselves into a sixth place by the end of the season.
You know, yeah, it's a nice attainable little goal. It looks a lot better than eighth, but. You know, and I was listening to you and Jason interviewing David Fine during the intermission on Saturday. And I guess I knew this but didn't really think that much about it. Iowa being in the division they are, that is a lot of franchises with a long, illustrious history, either in the IHL, AHL, or ECHL. So, you know, that's a tough chore for a team to come in like that against all these established teams and try to win right away. So maybe it's going to just take a little more patience for this team to get its own identity and become a contender.
You know, the interesting thing about them, too, is that the two closest teams to them, like distance-wise for driving, are not even in their division. That'd be Kansas City and Wichita. Toledo, Cincinnati, places like that are like, you know, a 10-hour drive or 9-hour drive to get there or something, that's not a short trip to anywhere. And, I understand they got put in the Central Division for good reason. Okay, I totally get that. But that did not really do them any favors. And so I'm, for fans out there that are watching this club and going, man, I'm really disappointed in where they're at. And consider that this team has a lot of obstacles to them. As Kevin said, they face some of the best teams franchise-wise and AA hockey history, and then you got long drives everywhere you go, and they've had a whole bunch of three different city and three night trips too. So you know, stick with them. This team is out has really played very well since January, I think, and I think there's good things ahead for this club.
But could you imagine if they did play in the division with Kansas City and Wichita, where boy, I mean, you'd have to be making road trips to Texas, Idaho.
Yeah, rapid. Yeah, exactly. Rapid City. But
Rapid
some
City.
Long trips,
yeah, it would be insane.
Yeah.
So,
the one
I guess
thing
although
that
it doesn't sound too pleasant, it's the lesser of two evils.
The one thing I'll say that they do differently in that division, Kevin, that I think would benefit a club is that when you go to Utah, you go there for three games. You know, you stay the weekend there. Maybe you have Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, or something. You know, you're not traveling three different cities in three different nights. That stuff just doesn't happen in the Mountain Division. And so, you know, you might have a home and home. Like, and they've had those with Kansas City this season around New Year's where they went to Kansas City and then came back for two. And those are okay, you know. But you could make a two- or three-game trip down to Tulsa or down to Allen or whatever and know that you don't have as much travel and your team can rest in the same hotel for a night. I think that's the one part that I think that isn't appreciated. You're leaving Toledo Friday night on the bus. You're sleeping on the bus now, okay, to get to your next destination, which if I remember correctly, was Kalamazoo. Is that right? Okay. Then you're leaving Kalamazoo after that game's over on a bus to sleep on the bus to get to Fort Wayne to play at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's not a very well-rested team and a very comfortably rested team. But if you're out in Utah for three games, at least you're staying in the same hotel for the couple of nights. And so I think that gives you some kind of edge.
No, with what the Heartlanders have to do, it almost seems like it's right out of Slap Shop where they're hopping on the bus and getting the poker game going and reading hockey news and what have you.
Exactly right. That's exactly what it is. Well, Kevin, we are down close in April. One of the most exciting times in the sports world, as far as I'm concerned. So we're getting to the end of the NHL season and hopping into the playoffs. So what are we going to talk about this week with Minnesota Wild?
Well, we're going to talk about what hasn't been a good topic, and that is Minnesota Wild playoff success, or there within lack of. And it's been, you know, it's so tough because you get so engrossed in this team, and then they rat off. They've had a lot of really good regular seasons. But, you know, the playoffs are just cruel. You can play really good all season long, but if you're not good, if you lose 4 out of 6 games, you're done. And it just really has not gone good for Minnesota for so many years. And you hope this is the year that they're going to break it. But, boy, I honestly think if you're going to get through to the second round, you have to find a way to win the division and try to avoid Colorado and Dallas in the first round, because you don't want to go through a gauntlet where you got to try to beat Dallas and then turn around and try to beat Colorado or vice versa. You hope that you get a wild card team, beat them, hope that Dallas and Colorado beat the crap out of each other in the first round, and maybe there you go from there. But, you know, as Wild fans, we've been conditioned to think not how well it's going to go, but how it's going to end. And I hope this will be the year that things are different. But, boy, we've really have become accustomed to pain, blues, and agony when it comes to April.
So I have a two-part question for you for that, Kevin. So the first part is, last year when it was coming down to the end of the season, I know we were talking on the show and you said, anybody but St. Louis in the first round. Okay? You did not like that matchup at all. It didn't wind up being a bad matchup for them, but you were saying weeks in advance that this was the one team you didn't want them to face, other than maybe Colorado. Is there anybody that you look of the other 6 or 7 teams in the Western Conference and you say, not that team?
I think you'd have to say Dallas. Okay. I'm trying to think. I don't think Minnesota did not win. As far as I can remember, I'm trying to rattle my brain a little bit here. I don't think Minnesota won a regular season game against Dallas in regulation this year. It just was not a good combo for the Wild. They had to win one in a shootout a couple times, and I believe Dallas won in regulation in the other two. So I just don't think Dallas is a good matchup for them. So, like I said, use my formula. I hope that somehow they can win the division and have Dallas and Colorado beat up on each other in the first round, and maybe one of those teams that you don't think you're as talented as, you hope you go into a series and maybe they're banged up a little bit.
Okay, let's take you to part two now. You really liked these moves that they made at the trade deadline. You feel like this has made this a better playoff team by the additions. Are those additions, in your mind, Stanley Cup additions?
I think it's all depending on what number 97 comes back as. If he comes back as the dominant player he was during most of the season, or if maybe he's not going to be quite 100%. But I think, as we saw in the last year's playoffs, the Wild will go as far as Kirill Kaprizov can take him.
That's awesome. Kevin Lukko, thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure.